W-T-E-N-E-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
How are we doing, everybody? Welcome back to the Sean Atwood Channel. I'm Ron Swanson. We are live with the one and only Mr. John Wedger here for Crime Theory. A little later than usual. We will be usually at about 8 o'clock. Hopefully, if not, it'll be 9 o'clock. But thank you, everyone, for waiting. And I know Sean is live at 10, so it will be an hour-long show tonight. And a big thank you to everyone who's here. But rather than me waffling on as I usually do, John, how are you? You've got some big news, so we'll wait to drop that one. But how have you been keeping, sir? How are you?
Yeah, good. It's really strange because Corinne Hustabart said to me once, she said, you know, you've got to be like a submarine. Go under for a while, then come up, do a bit, and then get back under again. And it's sort of one of the things where I've resurfaced. And it's gone absolute, it's gone crazy. It really has. It's and the same with social media. I've when I was last on social media, my views are up 2,000 per video and that. Now I'm getting 40,000 for every, even the small, innocuous sort of stuff. It's just doing incredibly well.
Well,
so I have no idea how that has happened.
Do you know, every single person I've spoken to in the last 3 weeks, all survivors, every single one of them owns your book or one of your books.
One lady
actually lives very, very, she's a local to you. And she said, oh, you know, I walked past him once and I said hi. And, you know, you're a hot commodity, my G. Hot commodity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, hopefully when it's almost done, and each time I get near to finishing it, I'm thinking, I've got to put that in. So
right.
I may well end up with another one coming on board. But, strange stuff's happened. It's I had like a two-day lull where it was quiet, and then, bang, this explosion of bits and pieces. But one of them, I was sort of travelling home from my work with the young offenders the other day. And I get a phone call, and I'm one of these people that uses their phone when they drive, you know.
You're not. That is, John is being sarcastic, MI5, or anyone who is watching. We're rehearsing
cycling,
a play.
Cycling Mikey would get a damn
call. He got Ricky Sunak's wife the other day. Did you see that? Ricky Sunak,
did he really? All right.
Got his wife sitting, going through her Instagram, as she's pulling up to the red lights, and then sat and filmed her. It was an absolute banger.
Yeah, he's got his uses, that bloke. He winds me up unbelievably, and I can't believe it. No one's thrown him in the Thames, but yeah, when he does stuff like that, anyway.
So funny. It's one of these people, it's great content until you are the content.
Yeah, just one of not say smash him, wouldn't you? But yeah, he's a real geeky sort of guy. But yeah, when he does stuff like that, you know, as long as he's impartial, if he's a dick to everyone, then you can live with
him. That's it. There's a whole YouTube channel, John, of people that chase and hunt people down and put magnets on their car if they don't put their trolley back in the right place at supermarkets. It's hilarious, right? It's the world we live in, John. It's the world we live in. So carry on with what you're saying. It's been like, things are good.
Right,
your name's getting out there. It's blowing up.
Yeah, so I get a call, and it's from a solicitor, well, he's barrister actually, and for representing the grooming gang inquiry, and he's one of the main briefs on it. And he said, "Look, we had a meeting the other day, and for some reason, your statement appeared." Now, this is a 52-page statement that I presented for the independent inquiry. I made the statement about 5 years ago, and it was to be the lengthiest statement submitted in the organized criminality strand of the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse.
Okay.
Which basically is the technical word for grooming gangs. So it did cover the grooming gangs in the first inquiry. But just,
need to try and say GGs, John. Let's try and say GGs.
GGs, yeah, okay, GGs. So anyway, my statement that the government did everything to try and not get me to give evidence. They sort of banned me from giving live evidence, but my document evidence, you know, they couldn't. It got in, and it held water. It was quite a solid document. And in there, I sort of speak about what happened to me, the bigger problem, and I give a remedy. And I actually provide a Venn diagram of how this occurs, this exploitation occurs, and the legitimacy around it, even though it's morally reprehensible. But so the government, again, they hated it. So what they did on the first day of the hearing for the organized gangs, someone had got my statement and unpaginated it, and depagination. So paginate is, you know, clues in the word page. So when you get a statement like mine was 52 pages long, it's basically like a novellio. It's like a small book, really. And the first page, you know that is the first page of your statement because it has the declarations on it, the legal declarations,
yeah.
And it has witness statement. And of course, the last page is quite evident that it's the last page, but anything in between, it looks the same. So if you start mixing them up a bit, the statement becomes nonsensical very quickly. It's like reading a book that's not in any chronological order. It's just what's going on here. So luckily, my barrister got leave to remain within the hearing and managed to get a 3-day lay down where that we could repaginate, basically rewrite the statement, which we did. We stayed late every night and we got it back in. They did everything. They didn't want me giving evidence. Anyway, I did, my evidence did get in there, and it went on to result in 5 amendments or additions to the law in respect to child safeguarding. Right, and it mainly around kids in care and missing persons, which is the real premise of these victims of these GGs, you know. So this statement got presented at the meeting for this new GG inquiry, and a barrister read it and he went, "My word, this lad, what he's saying, or this guy, what he's saying is actually what has happened, and what he's proposed is actually our proposals. This is how the experts have said we should remedy this." So they was impressed, to say the least. So there was a solicitor there that had represented me, and he said, "You know, I know this guy. He's all right. We work well with him." And so they said to him, "Well, ask him if he wants to come on board." So I get a call from the solicitor and say, "Look, John, we'd like you to come on board as an advisor to the inquiry." And I went, "Yeah." I said, "Listen, anything that can help bring any of this, whether it's the Muslims doing it or the Kosovans doing it,
anyone,
I'm on board.
100%.
As you know, with my narrative, it's not defined to one ethnic group, one religious group. It's not broader than that.
Yeah,
which was the reality of what I worked with. So I know the media and another campaigner for this stuff wanted me to go on about the Kashmiri Muslim boys doing it. And I said, "Well, you know, of course, there will be those in that demographic that do it." But it wasn't my reality. I dealt with Muslims that did it, but I dealt with Jews that did it, with Jamaicans that did it, Rastafarians. So, you know, it was across the board. So just as wide was the demographic of the victims of this, so were those that did it.
100%.
And that really is what they don't want coming out. They don't want it. So we can pigeonhole this, we can marginalize this and say this is it, but really we're taking our eye off the ball if we do that.
Let me just ask you this, because obviously you're my boy, right? And I'm a cynical son of a gun. and the glass is always like, it's not half full. It's just exactly half filled. Do you know what I mean? Let's call it as it is. It's not empty. It's not full. With you popping off, is there any way, and I'm sorry to ask you this, is there any way they're trying to get you into a time hole where your attention's taken off other things to stop what it is you're doing? Or is this completely independent from a governing body that could have an ulterior motive?
Yeah, the legal firm I'll be working with, they're independent from it. And okay. They've done a lot of good work. So,
good.
No, not really. I think the days of that happening have long gone. I mean, I did get offered a media opportunity, but it was strictly to talk about Muslims, and I turned it down. I said, no. That may well have led to television. That may well have led, and in fact, it did, because the stuff I was started talking about, especially when it comes to the ritual abuse, it got classed as conspiratorial. And a member of parliament put me in touch with Channel 4 dispatches, and I went and met with them. And they were like, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. We're going to do something here. And then, of course, they then get a phone call, drop John Wedger out. He's a conspiracy nut. And the same with the current affairs. I met with a guy, head of current affairs, a guy called Tom Simons for the BBC. He's head of all the news programmes. I spent a whole day with him, and I took along documented evidence, good documented evidence, was contentious whether I should have it or not. Anyway, I had it, and I sat down with him, and because it involved politicians, he said, no, we can't go near this. So the BBC know about it. They all know about it to the core. The lower down, the foot soldiers don't, but those at the top, they know exactly what they're dealing with. There's no surprise. Same with the media. They know exactly what they're dealing with. But whether they can use it is two different things. So, yeah, it's... They couldn't pigeonhole me. That was what they wanted. Had they have had, me as a little lapdog talking about one little thing, then I'd be all over the newspaper. I'd be on the telly. I'd be on Good Morning programmes and all that sort of thing. But they can't. And I prefer it that way, because for me, it's how it should be. I've always been a bit of a renegade, and I'm not seduced by the lights. I really ain't seduced by the lights.
Some people are unbuyable. I said this a lot. So with all this happening, is there an opportunity for you to work with this legal firm and present further issues at a later date? For example, your experiences with the judges, the police, all of that. Is there scope for 5 years down the line, you've finally been able to put some nails in some coffins from the past?
Yeah, I mean, I was mentioned in the final report that Justice Jay did. My statement was a public document, but there was two statements out. There was a couple of hundred statements submitted. There was two of them were removed very shortly after it became public domain, and mine was one of them. So there's a reference to it. There's a catalogue number of my statement, but when you click on it, it's gone. It's disappeared. It's like a blank document, which is very, very odd. But the tangible document is still with the original solicitors, and that is going to be tendered again. But I gave this evidence 5 years ago, and of course it's come back round again. And like I've said to you many times, this topic will keep resurfacing. It will never, ever go away. I mean, Channel 4 came out with a documentary the other day about a bloke called Bullen Forsyth. Bullen Forsyth was a social worker working for the London Borough of Lambeth, and he'd uncovered horrific child abuse, and he was going to speak out, and he was murdered. And his house was set on fire, and his family never, ever got justice for this guy, because he knew what was going on. And it's not just about the SEX of kids. It's about the torture that went with it, the physical abuse, horrific things that these kids went through. And many went on to have complex mental health, suicide, lives. I know one guy, he ended up spending near enough every single year since he left the kids home in prison. He's done a horrific amount of time inside. All for petty stuff, but because, he ended up on drugs, and that's where it took him.
Yeah, the cycle Oh, it's the ripple effect of the trauma and abuse, right? It just descends on people.
That's exactly the terminology I used on my live earlier. But yeah, you just don't know. I mean, I'm always available for comment. I've done enough of these podcasts, you know, over the past few years. I've been on many people's different platforms and said my points. So my narrative's out there. If you want to find me, I go down the street, people know me. So it's out there. But, you know, society is in stratas, right? And I've always said, if you want change, you've got to get to the white middle classes of this country. They're the change agents. And some people, they pitch themselves, well, they'll never address that demographic. And when I go to protests, I tend to turn up at most protests. I do it very incognito. I don't usually like to be noticed. But I go to most major protests, whether it'll be the lockdown ones or the right-wing ones or whatever. And if I go to, say, like the Tommy Robinson ones and stuff like that, people will know me because that's the demographic. It tends to be more of a working-class demographic, and there's clearly survivors of abuse that go there and they know me. But if I go to like the farmers' protest, for example, no one will know me because it's white middle classy types. You know, they haven't got a clue who I am. You know, so that's how it works. You know, we think that, you know, we assume that we're across the board, but we're not. We really aren't. So assume nothing. Assume nothing. You know, this is a good platform, but, you know, if a story get years ago, it was newspapers. So if a story got in the Sun, it was the working man who read it. But the right-wing working man, the left-wing working man wouldn't know anything about it. And the middle classes, the ones who read The Guardian and The Telegraph, they definitely wouldn't know about it. So, yeah. You know, and that's it. That's just how it is. So we think that we... you know, everyone knows this, but actually they don't. And when you get up to the political realms, they haven't got a clue. They really haven't got a clue. They don't give a toss. They really don't. And I did quite a bit, you know, addressing Parliament. And the only time they ever took notice was when my colleague and fellow campaigner, a guy called Bill Maloney, who's anyone who knows Bill, knows he's a guy not to mess with. He's a very, very tough man. He's from the streets of Brixton, grew up on the streets, calls himself the Cockney Irishman, brought up in the care system, travelling family, really. And he went on to become a very, very tough guy, but you know, no-nonsense, stalwart of a campaigner. And we went into Parliament, Bill and myself, and Bill just basically verbally attacked the MPs to their faces at a committee room meeting. And he went straight in their face and he let them have it. And he did the same to Nick Clegg when he was a joint prime minister. He caught Nick Clegg out on when he was giving a sort of an open air address on something. And, you know, he shook Nick Clegg to the core. And at that point, they will know who you are. But apart from that, they don't know, and they haven't. They, you know, politicians won't know about this show. They won't know about Sean Atwood. The only time they'll know is if the intelligence services brief them, because we've become conspiratorial about some rhetoric to take down the government, and then it will then gain that ascent. But other than that, and these things will be monitored by the police and by the intelligence services. So the police have a thing called the Open Source Unit.
Yeah.
They're based over at a secure building in Lambeth, where you'll find there's an area called Spring Gardens in Lambeth, and all the intelligence services are based there. So the National Crime Agency, the police intelligence teams, the government intelligence teams, the military intelligence, are all based in this very, very small triangle of land. From the river down to Vauxhall Station, and strangely enough, it's where you get all the what they call dungeon clubs, all these sort of hardcore homosexual nightclubs, all based in the same area. So no connection there, nothing to see, you know. But these open source units will monitor all of this stuff. They will do. They will do. And they'll be looking for conspiracies. They'll be looking for anti-government stuff and violations to the law. So one of the guys who's gaining a lot of social media traction at the moment is a guy called Charlie Veach. I don't know if you've ever come across him.
Yeah.
Charlie Veach is, I think he's from Edinburgh originally, but he's a big guy, and he's now goes and just films like Tramps on the Street, really, around Manchester. But, you know, I knew Charlie because I was part of the team sent to interrogate him because they were monitoring him. And back in the 2000s, he had a little organisation called the Love Police. And Charlie was someone who is highly intelligent. He's very easy to listen to. He's very entertaining.
I know the guy.
Yeah,
he's the auditor that likes to use his feet when he needs to.
Yeah, he gives them a good belting, doesn't he? And boots them. Yeah. Now I like Charlie. So Charlie, if you're watching, this isn't against you. Charlie will remember me, and although I was sent on a professional capacity deal with him, we got on well and we came to a very good agreement. But he was going to do something on the royal wedding, I think, when William was marrying Kate or whatever. I can't even remember. I don't even care for the royal family. But he went around there with some sort of they classed him as a disruption, and they've been monitoring his social media, and they've been monitoring him saying, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to cause a bit of a furore at the royal wedding. Well, that was it. All guns were blazing. He was in the crosshairs of the intelligence services, and they really went for him. And I mean, really went for him. And I was working on an anti-protesters unit, a covert unit at the time. And I've seen what the government will do when you come out of favour with them. They will go for you, like, especially when it comes to protests and things like that. They will. What is very interesting is when we see the Southport riots, a bit like the student riots of 2010, the government were really worried about that, and they really went out their way to prosecute these students. And you might not get bitten initially, but it could take up to 18 months, but the police are going to get you. There's enough CCTV for you to be recognised, and they'll come and get you. And these students, well, ordinarily, they'd have been given words of advice. So we're actually getting 18 months imprisonment. And I can remember saying on this show that the Southport lot, that they can look at getting 18 months to 2 years. Well, they actually got more than that. They got 3 years, which was horrific. But, it just goes to show when the government stamp their feet, this is what happens, you know, and this is what they will do. They will really, really come down when they have to and when they want to. And also attorney generals have a political bias. So if we have a right-wing government, part of the right-wing policy, the Tory policy, especially anti-social crime, so any case that goes before the Attorney General that then gets passed down towards the CPS and into the court system and everything else, if it's one of the government's agenda to deal with, the Attorney General will make very, very harsh sentencing. So anything to do with antisocial behaviour and things like that, the Tory governments will tell the Attorney General, you must really, really, really come down hard on these people. Right now, at the moment, of course, we have a borderline socialist Trotskyite government at the moment. And the Attorney General will be briefed that any anti-government rhetoric or offending will get dealt with incredible harshness, which is what we're seeing happen, right? You know, people that are anti-government are getting really hit hard, whereas offending against kids isn't, because that's the agenda. And you find that left-wing constituencies, their children's home have more cases of abuse than right wing. And because that's all down to liberalisation and equality and not equity. So that it's all equality laws and laws pertaining to ethnic grouping and also to sexual orientation. And we found that with the London Borough of Islington, which has always been very, very lefty, middle class and lefty, they, you know, during the 70s and the 80s, when it comes to equality with homosexual applicants, they weren't, what they were not vetting any applicants that were homosexual males for residential care home jobs. And of course, what happens is within that demographic, the paedophile was getting in, and they knew that if you had convictions for S offending against kids, ordinarily vetting would detect it, but if you was homosexual, they weren't allowed to look at it.
It's interesting because you often talk about that, and I often think to myself, like, why though? And I just done an interview, John, today with a survivor of exactly what you're talking about. A human transportation industry running through the gay clubs of the 80s and 90s. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't so much the, I mean, there was predatory men there, but it was like the doormen, the managers, the barmen. It was all these people facilitating this transportation of young individuals, because it often comes down to it that you're more likely going to find 15, 14, 15, 16-year-old young gay men who have gotten into the club and all the rest of it, but then start getting shifted about the place, which is an accessible commodity as opposed to the concept of having to snatch a 7 or 8-year-old. It's a much grander scheme.
Yeah, and
that's the reality, man. You'll hear the story in a couple of days, everybody, but this story is wild, and it touches on exactly what John has been.
And it is political correctness, and that's what it is. And these criminals exploit it. And then you get the argument, what are you saying, that homosexuals are paedophiles? And I clearly state that that's not what I'm saying. But how immature and puerile and distorted, cognitively distorted, is it for someone to come up with an argument like they are in some way the victim when it's a kid that's a victim? You know, it's a bit like these Say No campaigns, children saying no to abuse. It's not for a child to say no. It's for a perpetrator, a grown man, not to do it. They're putting the onus on the child, the responsibility for offending on the kids. That's absolutely distorted. And it's the same when you get people like me highlighting those that are doing the abuse and being attacked for maybe an anti-Semitic rant, a racist rant or a homophobic rant. It's not my rants, if they can ever be classed as a rant, are there purely to protect children. And I've always said, I don't care if I upset an adult. I really don't care. I'm not interested. Yeah. Go cry to your mum if she's still alive. I don't care. Right? My thing is, I don't like people abusing children. And it doesn't matter who the kids are, what the kids are, don't do it. It's as simple as that. Do not do it. And that's that. And if you've got a problem with that, well, I'll live with that one. That's not an issue. But what was interesting with the... with the Southport one was the veracity and the swiftness in which the government responded in picking up people that attended these so-called riots, you know. And they were just a disorder and a disgust that really was a horrific crime against children. But we saw a similar thing occur in Belfast, right, in Omar, you know, Antrim, in that County Antrim, you know. And... I wonder how much the police will be as zealoted against that sort of disorder as they were on the mainland. I don't think we will see it. I really don't, because the attitude over there is totally different. You know, they really are a bulldog sort of breed out there that have had enough and have got a history of standing up for their real inherent beliefs.
Look, it's interesting you say that, because... we seen a few weeks ago a video of somebody who had travelled over from France on a boat saying that he's coming to Ireland to R-word the children of Ireland. Then it quickly cuts to a video of about 40 Irish men chasing this guy out of his encampment, smashing and burning up his whole encampment that's out in the woods. And just last week, we've had, I think, Ireland's been on fire for the last 5-6 days. there was two 14-year-old Romanian boys that were arrested for allegedly orally R-ing a young girl. And they, quite rightfully so, have taken to the streets to show their absolute dismay for it all. Is it logical that they're all labeled racists and this is racially incited violence? How quickly are they weaponizing this reality towards us, John?
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Initial Quality Study Award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
Look, they get away with it on the mainland, but they won't get away with it over there. They just won't. And, you know, the police force over there, they've got the vehicles to deal with it. But I was talking to a friend of mine who was in the army during the 70s and the early 80s, and he was posted out in, Belfast. And he said, if the police start intervening, they'll get shot like they did back in the 80s. So they won't intervene. So that, you know, there was people just walking past the coppers and setting fire to bins on the street and everything. And there was no intervention from the police because they dared not. And, you know, they will probably advise, do not. It's too risky for them to do it. But that, I don't think they will be going for them as zealoted as they did on the mainland. But, you know, I've been researching the laws regarding these people on boats. And what's fascinating is the journey they take, the passage they take from the northern French coast over to the UK. And they tend to make their way into the certain place in Kent. And that's where they land, as it were. Now, the law has been changed over recent years. It looks like it's to accommodate this. So Dover Control, the border force, the immigration centre for the channel, it is so advanced. It has drones, everything. It even knows what type of seagulls are flying across the channel, you know. So they know all the pleasure craft and all the commercial craft that is in its reach. And on top of that, they get information. So the Royal Yacht Association, the RYA, has been training their license holders to sort of pass on information and also training them on how to assist with these people on boats. Because years ago, if you facilitated this
question. Listen, John, you know as well as I do how you deal with it. If you've got drones, just put a pointy stick on the drone and gets to popping some boats, you know?
Well, you look at this, it's really interesting. And you've got to look at the laws and you've got to look at what's behind it all, right? So they know everything that goes on. And these commercial vehicles, what they're doing is they are passing information on to Dover Control because they're a hazard to navigation and they have a right to address that and say, you know, this boat's and it's got people on there, so it's a hazard to life. And they say they risk their lives, but they don't. These boats don't go out in inclement weather. So Friday the 13th, the other day, 2 days before, the sea state was too rough. Right, so there were no passages, right? On Friday the 13th, there were 14 landings on the Dover beaches, the Kent beaches, right? And there was something like 1,400 landed in that day. And in 2024... 41,000 people landed on the beaches of Kent, right? Now, Rishi Sunak, as repugnant as he was against this, and I genuinely think he was. So he set out to say, right, they will be deported within weeks of landing illegally on our beaches, and they will be returned to their homes or they'll be returned to a third-party safe country. And that country that was designated was Rwanda, right? So if you're running away from what you class as asylum, and the countries that predominate this are Syria, Afghanistan, and Iran.
Nothing suspicious or dodgy history with any of those countries, John. No reason for us to worry about military-age men coming into our country.
But also, bar Syria, Afghanistan and Iran, they're not under civil war, right? You know, they're now classed as safe countries, and Afghanistan is now branching out into tourism. So why the asylum? I don't know. But anyway.
You know exactly why this. It's not asylum. It's we're talking about something massive here, John. And you know yourself, when you look at the three big religions of the world, there's one specifically that is looking to spread their way.
And now so we've got to look at, you've got to break this down, because there's always this a little way into this, right? So when you land a boat on a beach, right? So they would say within weeks they'll be sent home or sent to Rwanda, right? So the British government, that's what it proposed, right? It was barristers for Europe who prevented it. So the barristers stopped this, not our politicians, the barristers, right? Out of the 41,000 that landed since 2024, how many have they sent back? They've sent back 21. 21. We was promised that they
guaranteed, John, as well, that the only lawyers and surgeons that made it over, the ones with the prominent skill sets, those 21, gonzo.
Yeah, and the other thing is, they're meant to be examined by a doctor.
Yep.
Right, so anyone that comes over that's just infirm or whatever, diseased, you know, they don't get examined by a doctor, not that I'm aware of. But here's the clincher on this. Two things. Firstly, once they're landed, that they're told they're never going to get citizenship, but they don't need to, because they are allowed under this reunification of the family act that came in, that their immediate family can come over here and join them.
Right? Great idea. It's a great idea. Nothing better than one individual with no papers accessing somewhere illegally, and then just to celebrate them arriving, they can now ask every member of their family to come over, who I imagine will be subject to some sort of scrutiny, but I mean, they're not exactly filling me with much faith here, John.
But it gets better. So the Immigration Act said if you land illegally, that's an illegal entry, and you can be subject to 12 months imprisonment, a fine or both, right? Okay, but that's if you evade immigration. But if you're coming over on the boat, right, and Dover Control are more than aware of every single boat, and I'm telling you now, every single boat, so it's not like they sneak in, they know. They then get escorted by this newly formed unit called the Border Force, right? So when the Border Force finds these boats and the RNLI and also the RYA have people now, when they escort the boats into the sea, into our beaches, it's no longer classed as an illegal entry. It's classed as an arrival, which means they're not subject to prosecution. Right.
What is going on?
Yeah. Honestly, when you look into it, it's proper madness. It's crazy. But you've got to look into it and you think this is orchestrated. Now, on the other side, the French, they've turned boats back and the French have accepted them, right? It has happened. The French have been quite cooperative, but the French are watching them getting the boats. But then look at gendarme law, right? The French law for the gendarmerie. We'll deal with it, right? Their law states that the moment they go into water, they're not allowed to pursue them, right? So when they're on the land, they can. So they tell the people, run into the sea, and the French can't touch you. So all they've got to do is wade into the sea.
What the French can't touch. Absolute nonsense, John. That's nonsense.
And it gets even better. There's a little town called Gravelines, and it's between Dunkirk and Calais, and there's a river that flows into it, right? And this river goes into an estuary. So these people traffickers put the boat in the river, and then, because they can do that and not get caught, so there's no one on there, they poodle up the river into the estuary. They wait, and then the people are brought, are told to wade in, and the police are not allowed to go and get them out. They're not allowed. And there's a loophole.
It actually looks like these people are being pushed out to sea by the police.
Yeah, but the moment their feet are in, the police are told, don't bother. Don't bother. That's the rules. So it's a joke. The whole thing is
so right, so because I've got a functioning human brain, right, how can we possibly say that the people making these rules are competent if we're not looking at a systematic, like, mass importation, a purposeful mass importation? It makes sense when you apply, oh, the governments want this to happen. It makes perfect sense then. But I don't get what the benefit is other than the complete and utter destruction of resources and the destruction of culture.
And therein lies the argument. It's who benefits. It's the same with criminality. When you investigate a crime, you've got to look at who benefits. Who benefits from this? And therein, again, lies your answer. We are yet to see who benefits from this. We are yet to see. But it's clear criminality. It shouldn't be happening. There is a process put in place that has always sort of been adhered to in respect to people that are fleeing tyranny in their own lands. But this isn't it. It's on a massive scale. It's on an industrial scale. And they're facilitating it. And the law is... And you've got to look at who drafted up these laws, who gave it royal assent, who voted for it, and the House of Lords have had to pass it. Who passed it? Did anyone oppose it? All right. It's been made law and it's got in, and the border force as well. Where have they come on board? And they've come in just to, and what they've done, they've commuted this legal thing that will get them nicked called illegal entry into arrival. And the moment it's arrival, it's lawful, and it's not then prosecutable.
See, we've seen some pretty severe rioting in America over the last few weeks, John. I don't know if you've been paying attention to that, but it's been quite wild. And this is all over the exact thing that we're talking about, is illegal access to a country with no papers, as we've got to say it, because the I word can be used against us. So paperless illegal people that enter a country. There was a protest that took place, like we say, all across America, and we've seen people burning the American flag whilst holding up flags to other countries, and them declaring that people think they should just be able to claim America is their own. That's basically where their mindset is. Then, John, we've seen a group of Americans and British go across to Egypt. There's a whole bunch of different countries, right? And try and cross the border between Gaza and or wherever it is in Egypt, right? The March to Gaza, it was called. And it blew my mind at how tight the border was of this nation. Okay. It also blew my mind that the police were standing by while local Egyptians were trying to pull protesters out of a group of people to do God knows what to them. And it's interesting how the people of the countries that some of these protesters fight for, it's interesting how when they're on their turf, how they get treated by these locals who they, with their wokeness, want to try and...
Okay, but look at that. It's a land border, and there's every chance that it's going to be at some point a bit porous, or it'll be broken in some place. It's difficult to patrol a land border. We're an island surrounded by 30 meters deep of water all around, and some of the most treacherous waters.
Yeah.
So to cross over into us is a real feat in its own right. You need equipment. And you need the weather, you need all these factors in your favour in order to half stand a chance of getting here. And now with all the electronic surveillance, mobile surveillance, drone surveillance, and also proactivity of some sort of agency, it's pretty much impossible. Yeah, it's not, because on Friday the 13th, just gone, 14 boats landed in the same place. I mean, it's just mental. Like you say... There's no effort being made. And if it is, it's going, the effort's going in the wrong direction. I can't see how they justify this.
I can't see how we have to justify allowing this. It seems like we, Poland, right? The Prime Minister of Poland, he decided that he's putting up a big fence, right? And if you come across that fence and that border without the right papers, or if your name's not on the list, John, right? And you don't listen to their guards, they will fire pew-pews at you, okay? Yeah. And they're serious. And it's fascinating when a country puts its citizens first in this day and age. It's almost mind-blowing to witness, John, because
we're so orchestrated, John,
to allowing this based off of the fact that if we don't, we're a negative, oppressive, right-wing fascist. And it blows my mind.
Anyone who grew up in the 70s and 80s, we were really hit hard with public information films. And one of them was about rabies, l'orage, the French call it, right? And it was rabies, you know?
Yeah.
So they said France has got the, northern France has got the highest population of rabid, wild, feral dogs than anywhere in Europe. And if they, we were all so petrified.
I remember being scared of the rabies adverts. I remember, it must have been the 80s, mate. 80s or 90s or something.
And because our border was so good, they never had one case of rabies in this country, not one. Now, today, there's a case of rabies in this country, right? So how has it happened? How have we gone from having the best border force in the world, that, you know, border control, immigration, customs, the best in the world, considering we pay the most for alcohol, the most for tobacco, and if you got caught with more than that, you were hammered, you were knackered, you know, and they kept that under wraps for so, so long. And now people are coming over on boats and just land on the beach.
Yeah, I tell you,
next time you're down at Dover on the beach, get your knob out and see how long it takes.
See how long it takes for you to be arrested. Yeah.
You know,
I often wonder, John, if the world leaders decided, basically, we got an email saying that, okay, listen, the UK is going to be invaded. Rather than that happening, we're going to sit down and play a game of chess. And if you lose, we're just going to slowly invade the country under the guise of illegal paperless people joining the country. We'll slowly change the culture. We'll slowly change the religion. We'll slowly do it all rather than we all start opening fire on each other. That would make sense to me, but we know it's not. And I just can't get my head around why we keep having to justify allowing this to happen. Why we're not allowed to be proud of our cultures and want to safeguard them.
Yeah, well, where I am now, if I walk out, I'll be the only white Englishman. Honestly, I won't see any another one, right? Now, how has that happened so quickly, right? So quickly. And most parts of central London are like that now. We're sort of like an extinct thing. And again, there's a pub just up the road from me now. It's quite an iconic London pub. And it shut down. And I said to the landlord, I used to pop in there for a pint every now and then, so why is it shutting down? He went, because this area now is predominantly Muslim, they don't drink, so we can't stay open.
Oh, so we're
losing our pubs.
John, and another thing to go with my theory of are we being slowly invaded because we lost a game of chess instead of having a war. Why the hell is there alcohol-free gin? Are you telling me that we're not slowly being pacified into a culture of replacing alcohol? Listen, if you've come from a culture where alcohol is banned, I can understand why you would want to, you think there's a relation between alcohol-free and regular gin. We are being, there's a mental grooming process going on here, man. And
but also halal fish and chips. How do you halal a chip, halal a fish? I don't know how that works.
Well, do you know, there's discussion of completely banning all of the Jewish and Muslim food preparations in the UK. And do you know why I think it's an interesting one to discuss? Because I remember being down south with my friend Craig, going into a little butcher's shop. And I'm telling you, a goat was being killed outside. I'm telling you now, there was a slaughtering of a goat happening in a courtyard that was not fit for this to happen. And it blows my mind. It really, really does. And I'm all for that. There's Buckfast, you know, Cameron, I drank that once in my life and it was a spicy experience. It was at the first ever 2-day camping global gathering in the UK. It was wild. Was it God's Kitchen? I can't remember. It was one of them. It was tasty. But listen, everyone, can you please make sure you like and subscribe? It is a shorter show tonight. We've got about 10 minutes left. Then Sean is going to be coming in with his live. I'm super excited about what's to come. I've just done two interviews today, one all about the state of the world affairs, the possibility of World War III preparedness, and another with a survivor who has gone through institutional horrors, shall we say, at the hands of British police, British care homes, British everything. It's just an unbelievable story. And anyone who's been a long-time viewer of John's or in John and I's series, most of the things that we have touched on from the 80s and the 90s tie in perfectly with this lady's story. It's so mind-blowing. It's still to this day. I've spoken to hundreds, possibly even more survivors. And you can see the moments in their story where the trauma is starting to affect them. And you could see when her nerves kicked in a little bit, and then she'd done her self-soothes, and she came right back into this warrior state. It was fascinating. You will see it very, very soon. Yeah, John, we've got about 10 minutes left. What else can we throw out there for our last sort of little bit here?
Well, I mean, this thing is, I've just been doing so much research into it, and I sort of didn't want to, and I just fell into it, and I started looking at the laws, and this is what you've got to do. I mean, we can all blame the people that are coming over here, but it's bigger than that, and it is orchestrated. And
Of course it is. That's the question.
And I'm with you. You know, culture is so important. When Europe happens, you know, people lost their currency. Greece, for example. Greece had the drachma. It was the oldest currency on the planet. Right, they lost it. And now Greece is in desperate poverty.
Yeah, it's wild.
And Spain as well. Spain, unless they get massive migration into the country, in 10 years they're going to be in such trouble because they're heading towards.
In 10 years, there'll be boats leaving from freaking Fife, heading over to Spain with a whole bunch of freaking Scots people in it, just trying to freaking escape.
The interior of Spain is getting now that is barren. They've got whole villages now are totally desolate.
Oh wow!
There's no work, and the Spanish aren't having children, so that the birth rate is
too hot, mate.
Especially in Spain.
It's too hot to have kids out there. But if you live in a country where the whole country shuts down for 4 hours in every day because it's too hot, no one's having babies. No one's having babies there. Can you imagine the stress of being a single parent in an unair-conditioned Spanish home on the top of a hill with no shade? Oh, mate. Oh, spicy.
And especially during the lockdown, I mean, Spain's like a socialist republic, and they sort of believe what their government tells them a lot more than we do. And yeah. Can you imagine being in southern Spain, stuck in a big block of flats in 40-plus degrees?
John, what about... Have you seen the mega block that they're building out in Dubai? Have you heard the story of the blade? Well, you know what I'm talking about?
One caught fire, didn't it, the other day? An 86
dude,
story.
Dude, forget about 86 stories. They're building two flats, okay? Right? So imagine you've got two flats. They're about a mile long each. And one end of it is where the sun rises, and the other end is where the sun sets. The both sides of the blocks of flats are all mirrors. So that when you see it from a distance, it blends in. And wouldn't you know it, John, everything you need to survive as a society is there. The shops are there. The police is there. The hospitals are there. Your work is there. Are you seeing a blueprint for a test building or a new way of moving?
Saudi Arabia is building what they call the wall, which is basically
that's what I'm talking about. The wall. Yeah.
I think it's more than a mile. I think it goes on for more than that, doesn't it? It's a huge.
Could you imagine if tomorrow morning you woke up and your local council office announced that plan? Okay, for a start, if they say that's going to be built in 10 years, we're never seeing that being built, John. The British government couldn't pull that off. They could not pull that off because they're going to throw that up, John. We're going to see that built and functioning very soon. You know, decades or so.
I'm the same with electric vehicles. You know, there's something I find really fascinating. They call it Tartaria, and it's this sort of whole a race that occurred basically around the 1800s and up to about 1870. And when you look at architecture, especially in London, you know, and Glasgow and cities like that, 1870 was absolutely fantastic what they built. And, you know, we just started having underground electric trains.
Yep.
We had trams, and they, you know, we had most towns and villages were covered by a train line. They've taken down 66% under the Beecham reviews of our train lines. We were served by you know, all this fantastic communication network.
Yeah.
All our towns had recreational gardens and bandstands, and it was a. You know
what's interesting about Tartaria, right?
Go on.
You know the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really interesting that all of the sniper towers, the arrow places, that the medieval folk would shoot their arrows from, all point into China.
Oh, okay. All right.
And wouldn't you know it, that the border of the supposed Tartarians was right along that exact wall?
Oh, yeah, because it was the Russians, weren't they?
Yeah. You were going to wipe out an entire civilization of people that still could build pyramids, that understood how to, this the hidden knowledge, shall we say, and you wipe them out and you're like, oh, they've left this big wall here. Let's just say it's ours. Fast forward, but the sniper towers tell a different story.
Yeah, that is brilliant. I've been looking into it for a little while. But
sick, bro. It's sick.
Yeah, it's incredible. But, you know, because I'm always in London and I love architecture and I look, and I see these train stations built in 1868, and they are magnificent.
Have you heard of the story of Coral Castle?
Yeah, it's in Florida. Yeah, that's right. Edward Lee Scallion, isn't it?
If he ain't the freaking great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson of a Tartarian family whose Book of Secrets managed to survive the wipeout of their entire civilization, that's exactly what we're dealing with.
What's interesting about that Lee Scallion guy was that a lorry turned up with these blocks of coral rock, and they were weighed 10 ton apiece. Yeah. And he told them, go and get an ice cream or a cup of tea and then come back.
And they came
back. And they were, and some kids were there, and they saw him levitating them.
Yeah, I know. You've got to remember, those stones were only on the truck because he moved the whole castle. He hand cut every stone.
Yeah.
Mate, I tell you, side chat, if you have not heard this story before, go and get a big glass of red wine and go and stick on one of the podcasts that tell the story of the Tartarians and all of this stuff, because it is freaking wild.
They call it the mud flood, don't they, as well, the mud flood.
Oh, yeah, of course. Now, let me just do a little bit of checking on if Sean is live or not. Give me one second.
I'll probably have to dash in a minute anyway. But
that's all right, mate. That's all right. I'm still waiting on Sean going, like, if you need to go, John, don't worry. I can sit and filibust until Sean.
Yeah, it's something that blows my mind. It really is. Mm. But I think as time progresses, this sort of information will come out. I think it will come out on all levels. It will come out regarding child abuse stuff. It will come out about politicians being blackmailed and really what is behind the church and all this. I think it will all flood out.
And the only things that will be allowed to come out are things that don't affect the bottom line. We had a guy in the 70s invent a car that would run off anything that was liquid. Snow, urine, water, rain, seawater, anything. Because it split the atom and harnessed the hydrogen out of the water.
Electrolysis, wasn't it?
Yep. And he was the first guy to ever die of food poisoning.
They poisoned him, didn't they?
Yep. Freaking food poisoning, bro. Because he refused to sell the patent. There's little dudes out in Thailand running their boats and their houses off of coconut oil, but they can't make any money off it because
if you look back at Rio de Janeiro in the 1970s, the main car they had there was a VW Beetle, and they all ran on alcohol.
Right.
All of Rio de Janeiro, the vehicles all ran on alcohol, which they got from the sugarcane. So they were totally self-sufficient.
It's funny you say sugarcane, because back in the day, all the street lamps were lit with hemp oil, and all the newspapers were printed on hemp paper, because the byproduct of making paper out of hemp is diesel fuel. And it wasn't until hang on a second, that's a lie. They were about to start using hemp in the paper industry in the UK, and they realized that it would have completely destroyed the industries that were there, because the byproduct of making the paper was this diesel. I got that mixed up. It's fun fact one gets wrong, people.
Well, the interesting thing, that's the theory about the Napoleonic Wars. They were all to do with the control of the hemp fields, because the boats back then, their sails were all made out of hemp. Canvas, you know, for painting canvas. It's cannabis, canvas is where it comes from, the same thing, you know. And we had Hampstead, this near here, it's Hempstead and Hemel Hempstead and all these hemp places. And of course, hemp doesn't rot, does it? 200 years. And Ford, Henry Ford, the first car invented was electric with a range of something like 300 miles on a charge. And all the panels were made of hemp and they didn't rot.
Yep. Well, it was declared as the miracle plant on Time magazine, where one plant was producing, I think, 700 or 800 different other products, from textiles to dynamite to clothing to rope. And the first ever law in America concerning the herb, shall we say, was that if you were a farmer, it was illegal for you not to grow a percentage of your land had to be designated to hemp. Because they were making all the sales out of it and the rope.
It also puts nutrients into the soil as well. It's one of the few plants that doesn't need fertilizing.
It's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah, it's a fantastic plant. Yeah, I'm on the same sheet as you. But it's these globalists, you know, they're going to hell, a lot of them. And those who protect them as well.
So, oh, yeah. I mean, we hope so, John. They've been getting away with it for a millennium. So hopefully the tides are turning. Okay. Lionel is live with Sean Atwood. John, thank you so much for being here. You're a legend as always. Make sure you find John links down in the description. I have been recording since 2 o'clock. My brain is frazzled. We'll see you next week. It'll either be at 8 or 9 o'clock. Thanks you all for being here, and you will be shunted over to the next show. We'll see you in the next one. Like and subscribe. Peace.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.